Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good.
You decide alone. But no one is alone.
People make mistakes. Holding to their own, thinking they're alone.
Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right,
giants can be good.
You decide what's right,
you decide what's good.
Just
remember, someone is on your side,
someone else is not.
While you're sitting on your side, maybe we forgot we are not alone.
No one is alone.
Will come out right now. We can make it so.
Someone is on your side.
No one is alone.
Thank you, guys. Good morning. They say we meditate. Take this time to get still. And know what the heck we're talking about. Breathe. Breathe in, breathe up. Breathe all the way through and all around. Breathe in again, and let that breath go all the way up to the highest part of our being, where we may turn on the light, so that we may know the light in me is awake now. The light in me is awake now. Those of you who care to, would you know that with me? The light in me is awake now. With the light turned on, I can see. I see what is. I can't explain what is. But I can see it, I can know it, I can accept it into my conscious mind. I can accept it into my thoughts, my words, my actions, even though I can't describe it. The light in me shows me what I am. The light in me shows me what we are. The light in me, awakened, fully illuminated, shows me the good that is, has always been, and always will be. So keep breathing. About to take a trip into the full silence. And I invite you to travel in with the thought. With my light turned on, I can see. With my light turned on, I can see. Let's go on in. With my light turned on, I can see. With my light turned on, I can see that I am. I can see that we are. I can see all good is. So with my light turned on, I am more confident. I can relax in the assurance that I no longer need to describe my good. I just know that my good is. I know that our good is. And so I declare this willingness to keep my light turned on. It is the one light in the house that we need never turn off. I keep my light on. And knowing that, let's start our journey back here. Back here to this sanctuary, this place we call unity. And as we come back, let us come back refreshed, renewed, fully aware of the good that has just taken place, that we may say thank you and amen. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm so glad to be back here. My talk is, we're never alone, get used to it. I said that in front of the choir, and Robert said, that means we'll never have any privacy. And I said, that's right. We've never had any privacy. We've just pretended that we couldn't be seen by spirit, that we couldn't be seen by life. Remember, 1989, I believe it was, my grandmother made her transition. This is before I had started any kind of healing work. In fact, it was what kicked it off. Well, it was my grandmother's transition. But for weeks after her funeral, it felt like when I came back to New York that my grandmother was following me over this shoulder and God was over this shoulder. And everywhere I went, and it felt just wonderful. I thought, I don't care. I don't care that I can be seen all the time. And it was one of the more spiritual experiences of my life. Before my mother made her transition, and that really kicked everything over to a new place. But I remember I wanted to see my grandmother. I was open to all sorts of paranormal at that point. I didn't study any of it. I was just open to something happening, something extraordinary for my life happening. I remember when I went back home a few months later, and I was at the cemetery, and I was there at my grandmother's gravesite, and I said, we called her George. Her name was Evelyn, but we called her George, don't ask. And so I said, George, if you want to come and see me, this would be a great time. And I'm waiting for her to walk right down the hill there towards me, and nothing. But I did notice that night, as I was alone in my room at my mother's house, and I'm about to turn off the lights, I said, George, do not come now. You will freak me out. I was only so open. I didn't need somebody in the closet suddenly opening and something I wasn't sure if I yet believed in. But I wasn't alone. That's when I became very aware. I am never, ever alone. I'm amongst a lot of things I cannot see, that I cannot hear. But I know I'm not alone. So I have to decide that the things I used to think were private, does that matter? Do I want to stop doing the private things? Do I want to pretend, oh, nobody can see me now? And so you're getting out of the shower, you are seen. But what I decided was I am seen by a presence that does not care about these things. And the story of Adam and Eve. Remember, how many of you are familiar with the story of Adam and Eve? Yeah. I don't know who reads the Bible anymore or ever has. But in the story of Adam and Eve, you'll see that once they ate of the tree of knowledge, they didn't eat from an apple tree. They ate from the tree of knowledge, which meant they questioned, is there more to life than this? Is perfection. And when they ate from the tree of knowledge, they suddenly were aware that they were naked. Now this is, whoever wrote this is someone who wanted to control us and shame us for our bodies. But metaphysically, when they were suddenly aware that they were naked, what I hear in that story is they weren't yet in the flesh. When all was perfect, they were just in God mind. They suddenly learned about duality by saying, is there more than one? And suddenly they came into the flesh, and that's how they became aware of their body and their shame of their body. So they had to hide not all their body, parts of their body. Mostly the parts that felt lust. That's what they had to hide, was their lust. They had to hide their craving. They had to hide their pain. They had to hide their fleshly desires. And so in your shame, what are you trying to do? Hide. We want to hide. But in spirit, we need to come out of the closet. Literally, physically, emotionally, has nothing to do with your sexuality. It has to do with your spirituality. To come out and say, I'm here. I'm a beloved child of God. I am not an evil sinner. Sometimes, perhaps often, I'm confused. I forget that I'm a child of God. But there is no being in truth that has any interest in me being guilty, that has any interest in shaming me for anything I have thought, for anything I have said, for anything that I have done. Some of you belong to fellowships that talk about amends making. And in case you don't know, all that amends means is to rethink. It doesn't mean to splay ourselves before another being in our guilt so that we may be redeemed. It means to rethink who we are. So if we have been a thief, the reason to make restoration for what we have stolen is so that we no longer think of ourselves as a thief. You see, if I just simply give back what I have taken, or if I just say, oh, I'm sorry, I took that, bye. That doesn't help me to rethink myself it's to rethink myself as I am, rather than as I have been thinking of myself as I am not. See, when I act out, when I lie, when I steal, when I manipulate, when I character assassinate, for some of you, maybe when you physically assassinate, I don't know, I don't want to know. I will have to report you by law, and I don't want to know about it. And so to rethink ourselves through our amends process. To make amends, therefore, is so that I won't think of myself as something less than God. And once I no longer think of myself as something less than God, I don't have to hide. I don't want to hide. Suddenly I become grateful for my whole past and what I am now. And it took that past to get me here. And so to become, oh, I'm never alone. I cannot hide. But so the Adam and Eve story, after they have transgressed, and suddenly they're hiding from God in the woods there. There are two people, and they're hiding as if God could not find them. Two people. You think you'll see us here. You know, it's like, they can't hide amongst a crowd of people. We here, we're in New York, we think we can just go anonymously through life. I can hide amongst all the people with my misery. The point is, cut it out. Quit maintaining your misery. Quit saying it's okay to stay miserable. There's no source that wants us to be miserable, that needs us to be miserable. Those are men and grandmothers of old who think we should somehow be guilty, that we should somehow be ashamed because we're too heavy, we're too thin, we're too bald, we have this, we have curly hair, we have short hair, we have black hair, we have blonde hair, we have whatever hair, we have no hair. You know, it's that we should somehow be ashamed for our behaviors, for our upbringing, for how much money we have or don't have, how much money we did have or didn't have, how much. I remember in seventh grade, I missed 56 days of school. Sadly, my mother didn't notice. I'll tell you a little bit about my past. I talked a lot about it. When I did get caught, I went back to school. And my shame was that what if I don't pass this year and I have to held back? But so I go back to school and my homeroom teacher basically threw me up against the wall and told me how ashamed I should be that I would do this to my mother. Now, I was not ashamed of having done anything to my mother. What I was ashamed of was our home life. And I wouldn't tell him. I would rather have taken the punishment than admit what our home looked like. I can forgive what our home was like now. It's not a part of my regret story. It really isn't. My childhood, as awful as much of it was at the time, really led to the good that I have now. It really led to a great story now and a great basis of comparison in thinking now. And it has really helped me in my service. Because I have a primary purpose, which is to serve. And not serve through drudgery, but through conscious realization of the presence of God. That's how I am to serve. Think about it. How many of you here have declared the absence of God already today? Subway, in the streets, when you saw the rain, when you got on the scale, when you looked in the mirror this morning. You know, every time you look in the mirror and you criticize yourself, you are declaring the absence of God. You are declaring the absence of love. What you are saying is, oh, if only I looked different, then I would be lovable. Then love would be present. Every time you look in your wallet or your bank account and you declare, there's an absence of good here. You're saying, oh, there's an absence of God. There's an absence of love. But we must start declaring the presence, the very presence of love in our face. My technique, it started years ago. Many of you have heard it. I've asked you in classes to practice it, which is first thing in the morning, you look in the mirror and you say, hi, God. It's hard to frown and scowl when you're declaring, hi, God. And you realize, oh, this is what God looks like. Oh, this is what God looks like, people. And if you look in the mirror, then you're what God looks like, and you're what God looks like, if you look in the mirror. But if you're looking at me right now, as I'm sure you all are, this is what God looks like, and it's beautiful.
Yes.
And I don't need you to declare otherwise. Believe me, I had enough years of doing that myself. Anybody who would look at me and say, you're not beautiful, I say, you're wrong. And that's okay. But the thing is, anybody of you, who would look in the mirror at home and you don't see beautiful, you're wrong. You're just flat out wrong. This is how we are not alone. There is always a divine thought. There is always a divine instinct waiting to be recognized and acted upon. In my meditation, I kept saying, there's good all around and I can't describe it. And that's because I can't. I can try. I can make stuff up. But it's not true. It's not true because whatever I say, it makes it small. If I try to describe the love that we are, I'm going to make it smaller than it is. It's just too big to describe. It's just too big to put into words. And for a lot of us, that's very unsatisfying. Until you can accept it and say, you know, somebody said, I love you. And they say, what does that mean? And you say, I don't know. I just know that I do. I am loved. Well, what does that mean? And you say, I don't know. I just know that it's true. And I'd rather be right about that than right about not being loved. Who? Anybody? Wouldn't you rather be right about what the good that you don't understand than the awfulness that you think you do? Yeah. Yeah, there we go. See? New thought. We're in a new thought community here today. Let's have new thoughts. Wouldn't I rather not know how to express the good that is then know every word to describe what you think is not good? Which means, as I say, you have to eat your guts out before you hit post. You have to go, I'm not right about that. You know, so often I think that we declare our thoughts because our feelings, I don't know how to spell. I don't know how to spell that, but I know how to spell my thoughts. And a lot of times we think our thoughts are our feelings, and what our thoughts are the mask for our feelings, the mask for fear, the mask for dissatisfaction, the mask for embarrassment, the mask. Now, all those feelings are based on a thought. But we're here to get well, all of us, and I mean get well in our thinking. Every one of us in this room is here to get well in our thinking, and a lot of us have gotten a lot weller over the years. But I wasn't told I couldn't have a complete healing. I was told I can have a complete and total healing. I was told it might hurt sometimes, but it doesn't have to. Remember one minister, he had said when he was in ministerial school that he said, I am willing to have a healing to the depths of my soul. And the next day he got the worst case of the flu he had ever had. So he changed it. I am willing to be healed with a feather. Nobody says we have to suffer through our healing. The suffering comes through the resistance. It really comes to... Well, I want to heal, but I don't want to give up this language. I want to heal, but I can't forgive them. I want to heal, but I'm an awful person. I want to heal, but I want to know I am a whole, complete, beloved child of God. But you don't understand, Sean. But what about? You know, what about? What about? You think you know this what about. You don't know. You just don't know. I don't know. If I don't know, how do you know? Anybody? If you know, come to, you know. So he raised his hand, I know. As I said, as a child, I experienced some abuse. I experienced some stuff. I'm not that child anymore. And those people aren't even still on the planet. At least not physically. They might be hanging out at my house, and I can't see them. I know I'm not alone. I don't know if it's those people, who it is. I know I'm not alone, but I'm not still being abused, unless I say so. It doesn't mean, well, they got away with it. Who got away with anything? No one has ever gotten away with anything, ever. Some people don't go to jail. And some people don't get punished by the physical law. But if we live in metaphysical law, we don't get punished. We live in the results. We live in the unsurety of God. Well, I'm pretty sure God is, but I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'm loved, but I don't know. If I were loved, how could this happen? There's a lot of misuse of love. A whole lot of misuse of love. A lot of parents think they love their children while they are hurting them. And that we can look at that and say, oh, those people. There's a lot of us hurting ourselves while we say, I'm a beloved child of God. And we do some nasty things to ourselves. We ingest chemicals. We smoke our cigarettes. We tell ourselves the most heinous things about ourselves. But I am a beloved child of God. I know because my minister told me so. Charles Fillmore told me so. Oh, it's in all the books. I am a beloved child of God. I am, I am, I am, I am as God created me. I am, I am. Get out of my way. I'm in a hurry to get to church. You don't understand, stupid subway. These people that run the subway, damn them. You know, and it's like, oh, wait a minute. I am exactly where I can be at this moment in my consciousness. One of my least favorite places to sit on an airplane is the back row. Some of you may love it, I don't. I like the front row. I enjoy the front row of airplanes. Once in a while, I get placed in the back row. And I have learned now, somebody needs my help in the back row. Every single time I've ever been placed in the back row of an airplane, somebody, stranger, is going through something and needs to talk to me that day. I know it. So anytime it happens now, I give thanks. I say, okay, thank you, God, I'm to be of service up back here today. And sure enough, I end up counseling someone. It's a lovely thing to know that. Imagine if you go through your whole life knowing I am to be of service today. I can't wait to see. Can't wait to see how I can be of service today. Are you familiar with the study of mind? Divine mind, capital M, mind. See, there is one mind, and we all have our little mind. And to be that one mind, it's a big circle. You can call it God, you can call it mind, call it principle, you can call it love. We all exist within that circle. All of us in our separate minds, our separate egos, our separate things, seemingly separate. But we're all in it. And that's how we're not alone. Within divine mind, I can pull whatever thought I want, positive or negative, within divine mind, because all thoughts exist within divine mind. Everything I call good and everything I call bad is in divine mind. All possibility is in divine mind for this experience that we have. And so, while some of you may not be in my living room when I go home today, oddly enough, one of you will be, I know because I'm driving them there. You may physically not be in my living room. You all are in my mind, and I am in yours. And so every time you think you're having a private moment, you're not. Every time you think there's no one to help me, it's not true. Every time you think I have to do this all by myself, you're wrong. Now, even if you can't find another body to help you, from where you stand, you can say, I call upon the minds that are exercised in the solution of this that I call a problem. And I call upon them to show me the way now. They are already here, but what I am declaring is my willingness to see and be seen. And so you see, there is no problem without a solution. There is no absence of divine beings to show me the way. And what's even cooler, I am one of the divine beings to help show others the way. Anytime you are struggling with a thought that you think I could help you with, you say, I call upon Sean. I call upon Sean because I think he can help me with this. I call upon the mind of Sean within the divine mind. Now, there's a story about a little child being put to bed at night, one night, and his mother gets up to leave the room, and he says, oh, stay with me till I fall asleep. And she says, oh, but honey, don't you know that God is with you? And he says, yeah, but I want somebody with skin on. Don't worry about the flesh. Declare, I am never alone. I could never possibly be alone. God is presence itself, and within presence is all mind, all being, and all beings. If you want to know that you have the help you need, the presence that you need, declare it. Declare it. Give up your thought of privacy and give up your thought of shame. So what that all these invisible beings can see you doing your most private things, your most embarrassing things. How wonderful. How wonderful that we would never again find any cause to be embarrassed in front of our brothers and our sisters, our uncles and our aunts, our friends, our peers. No one is alone. Thank you.
People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes, holding to their own, thinking they're alone.
Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right,
giants can be good.
Decide what's good.
Let it go.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Sean. And thank you always, Voices in Unity. Happy 2020. Does anyone ever walk alone?